This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Hello, and welcome to Two Words Wolves Pod. I'm Ryan Acton, here with me is Leo Sun, and we are going to skip the niceties today because we're going to head right into playtime, where we immediately take off our Wolves head here, and we go over the Minnesota Lynx coming a single point short in regulation and losing in overtime in Game 5. The New York Liberty in interesting fashion. Leo, what did you think about that game? Do you have any thoughts on the game with no controversy whatsoever?
I have not slept right since that game. It's been one day. It feels like it's been a year. It feels like I haven't slept. I went to bed upset. I don't know how long I may have accidentally dozed off for, but I woke right back up angry on a Monday. And my wife was like, yo, are you tired? It's a Monday. And I was like, no, I've been awake stewing in bed here. And, you know, I need to get this off my chest. Cheryl Reeve let it out, and I got to let it out. Everyone in life walks with a certain power and privilege in America. If you're a man, you can walk to your car in a parking lot at night, have minimal worries. If you're a white person, you can go on a jog in your neighborhood without fear. If you're of Christian faith, you can pray in almost any public place and feel safe here. If you're a cisgender person, you can walk to any typical public restroom without hesitation. And also in America, if you play for a big market sports team, you can shoot under 5%, that's one of 19, from the field and still be handed a championship. There's certain unalienable rights that big market teams have that have been unconstitutionally given to them for decades. And we saw that last night. The Liberty averaged 17.2 free throws a game in the regular season and 15.2 in the finals. They shot 25 in Game 5. The Lynx averaged 15.5 free throws in regular season, 12.5 in the finals. They shot 8 in Game 5, in the most pivotal physical Game 5. Minnesota only fouled 4 times more than New York, but that yielded 17 more free throws in the Liberty's favor. So what I got to say about this, Ryan, is there is one of the biggest media voices who has been one of the strongest East Coast biases of all time, criticizing officiating. We're talking Bill Simmons. You have the greatest player, arguably, in basketball history that's criticizing the outcome of the game. You have the opposing coach on TV recorded in the sidelines, 5 seconds left, literally asking her players to embellish for contact. And it worked. Now, icing on the freaking cake, you have a commissioner who awards a championship trophy, donning the winning team city, literally printed on their outfit. In the MNBA, or as we most of you know as the regular NBA, the equivalent to that is a Game 6 of the Sacramento Kings versus Los Angeles Lakers in 2002, the playoffs, Western Conference Finals. The infamous Tim Donaghy game where the Lakers stayed alive thanks to shooting 15 more free throws in Sacramento. But just imagine if that was in the finals instead of the Western Conference Finals. And imagine if David Stern awarded the Larry O'Brien trophy to Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal wearing a suit with the Hollywood sign imprinted on him. That's exactly what we saw last night, and it's bullshit.
Yep. I agree 100% that a lot of times, I'm not sure if it's real or imagined, but it seems like these big market teams get way more favor with the officials than the mid to small market teams. I'm the type of person who doesn't believe these games are straight up rigged. My day job is with a company that regulates that sort of thing. And so I tend to believe that they aren't straight up rigged. Even the stuff with, you mentioned the dress. I don't, I, I truly believe that that's just a simple oversight by her. But ultimately, I'm not sure that matters. Because the people that aren't as willing to be as discerning as me aren't going to believe that. They're going to believe that the game is rigged, and it's your job as a league to make sure that you appear that everything is on the up and up. And so when you watch a game that is all the whole pregame show is Liberty biased, basically crowning them champions before it starts, you get on a broadcast that is being broadcast by a great announcer, Ryan Rucco, but he's from New York, and he makes it clear that that is his bias through the broadcast. Again, he is a really good announcer, but in this specific case, I thought kind of showed his bias there. And then you get to the end, and like you mentioned, they're handing the trophy over while the commissioner is wearing a dress with the New York City skyline. And the WNBA is tweeting after the game that the trophy has made it to where it should belong. Or I don't remember the phrasing, which has now since been deleted, which I saw people talking about on Twitter, which I think is straight on. Why delete it? If it was a simple, like, yeah, they won the title, of course it belongs there. Like, yeah, I mean, in a certain sense, it does belong there. They won the final game. But, like, the minute you delete it, it just, the optics look like, okay, you did screw up. And to me, it's like the optics, it doesn't matter whether it's rigged, because I don't think it is. But it doesn't matter whether it's rigged from the league perspective, because you made it look like it was. And for a league that is new, that is just, I was thinking this playoff series is about as good as a basketball playoff series as I've ever seen. The two in the last 20 years are probably the 2016 Cavs Warriors and the 2013 Mavs Spurs, both of which are two of the greatest playoff series ever. And I'm trying to think there are probably other linked series in the finals I'm forgetting, but since like 2000, this is probably one of the five best basketball playoff series we've seen. And if the officials just simply called a regular bad game, it would remain that. But they took it so much further than that.
It's so ridiculous. I had people that probably were tuning in for their first, maybe second WNBA game that were texting me, is officiating always this bad during the game, like mid-game? And I have to laugh because I tell them, yeah, it's usually this bad, but it's not always this bad in this crucial of a spot. And you would think that. It's funny because you never want to know the officials by their name. You don't want to know them. We've talked about this before. The officials should be there to officiate the game. They should not have a personality. They should not have a clear bias, whatever. And it's funny because, you know, their names of these officials I know. I know Maj. Everyone knows Maj, right? And it sucks because everyone hates Maj. And I'm not saying about her person. I'm just talking about her officiating and the type of questionable calls that she makes. And you saw it rolling out of control. This wasn't just last second, they gave them one preferential call, no matter how big it was. It started in the second quarter when the Lynx were about to run away with the game. They had a double-digit lead. At the end of the first half, they called like back-to-back-to-back-to-back fouls against the Lynx, who happened to be in the penalty, on these very marginal contact with the Liberty bringing the ball up or like a traveling violation or whatever the case was. It just kept awarding them, and that's what kept them alive long enough to survive. And yet, Breanna Stewart, Sabrina Ionescu, two players that the league loves. They're great talents in their own right, but those are two players that the WNBA love to market. And they just could hardly even capitalize on this huge advantage. It took them having to get fed, spoon-fed, to get to overtime to be able to really finish a job. And to all those people that are saying, oh, well, the Lynx could have won it in overtime. Yeah, no shit. They could have won it in overtime, but should have never even gotten to overtime. Yeah, well, the Timberwolves didn't draft Steph Curry. Like, you know, they could have drafted Kawhi Leonard. They could have drafted, you know, this is all sure. Like, no, none of that would have happened had they done the right thing the very first time.
Yeah, that's my thing. You touch on it. Like, as sports fans, we're used to our team, our players blowing a certain game. And that's expected. I mean, it's not fun. But, like, that's the fun of it. That where, oh, my team is dumb. They did this bad thing. They did that bad thing. So when, if in the Western Conference Finals and the Wolves play poorly and lose, that stinks. But, like, that's how it goes when the Twins collapse down the stretch of their regular season and they lose, that stinks, but that's how it goes. When the Vikings make the playoffs and Brett Favre throws an interception and they don't make the Super Bowl, that stinks. And then the guy goes and commits fraud in the state of Mississippi, but that's these are all expected things on the field. But when it's when it's the officials, it's just, it's so hard as a fan to, because if you complain about it, then you come off as sore losers, which I see. But if you just eat it, that makes it even worse, because now I don't get to complain about the thing that is the reason why, a big reason why they lost.
Well, let me ask you, Ryan, what's worse, playing in a championship game where you may not have won, but you know you were the better team and you got robbed, or playing in a championship game and just getting blown out and know that you didn't even have a chance?
I'd still rather take this, honestly. I mean, emotionally, maybe that one's easier, but I still think the Lynx are awesome, and I had a fun time with that game, and so that's 90 minutes of fun that I would be giving up. I don't necessarily want to do that, but I see your point there.
Yeah, I mean, if it was up to me, I would like whatever outcome that Cheryl Reeve is hoisting trophy number 5 right now. That's, but unfortunately, yeah, this is a reality we're living in, and so there's nothing you can do about it. I know Cheryl Reeve is not the type of person to take this laying down. She will most likely try and file some type of, you know, appeal. Nothing's probably, 99% chance nothing's going to happen from this, just because of, you know, aforementioned biases. But you know she's going to go now, swing in, and I'm just so glad that she made her peace and she said her words, rightfully so, after the game.
Yeah, and just to go in kind of to some of the specific calls that were made, for the first 3 and almost pretty much the first 39 minutes of the game, it did feel like the Lynx were getting the wrong end of the calls, but ultimately it was just a regular amount of annoying, where about halfway through the second, the Lynx were up and it seemed to the game tenor switched from an officiating perspective, calling things differently than they had in the first quarter. And that, while that stuff is frustrating and the W should try to do a better job with getting better officials out there, ultimately, until the first 39 minutes of the game, I thought it was fine. It was just regular bad that you'd see in any basketball game, that if you look at each individual call, you could say, yeah, technically this happened, or yeah, there was some contact here, or each individual call was fine. And so if little calls are adding up, that's just how it goes. Until the last play of regulation, where Brianna Stewart grabs the ball. She makes marginal contact with Nafisa Collier, which causes her to then take 4 steps before putting the ball down. Just as clear of a travel as you'll see. I know in professional basketball, they don't call travel. I get it. If this was like she pump faked up and then technically stepped once before putting the ball down and they didn't call it, that would be fine. But she took twice, she hopped with the ball. And then she drives into the lane, goes into Alana Smith, and gets what I would deem is, at best, a weak foul, and at worst, just a made-up foul. And then they review it. This, and the Lynx are up 2 points at this point. They review it, and they say that Alana Smith is not in legal guarding position, which, if you're going to make that call stand up, that is not the part of the call that I thought was possible. She was in legal guarding position. I don't understand how that is not legal guarding position. She was there. She beat Stewart to the spot. She didn't shift as Stewart went up. The one thing she maybe did is she did like pull her hands down, and I don't think there was contact there on Stewart's elbow. Maybe the replay officials say is there's not enough evidence. Fine. But as far as I understand, that's not what legal guarding position means. If she hits, like, say that. If you felt she hit her on the elbow, then say that. Say that's the reason for the call. But if you're saying she's not in legal guarding position, I just have no other way to view that as just incorrect. And so that's the call that sticks with me, where that's just wrong. That's just an incorrect call at the most inopportune time. And for them to review it and for them to not change it is just baffling. And it stinks for the Liberty too, because there is a chance that that was a foul, as weak as it is. There's a chance that I didn't see who that air ball went to, but maybe it goes a jump ball. Maybe the Liberty get the ball back and they tie the game up anyway, and they get to celebrate a championship not marred by the officiating, because I'm sure they're getting all sorts of crap that is mostly undeserved for them. So it stinks for the Liberty. It stinks for their fans. And I would love to talk about the actual game. I would love to talk about how Collier missed a layup up to that could have sealed the championship anyway, and she missed it. I've watched it back. Maybe there's a foul. Maybe there's not. Again, those are one of those calls that is fine if it was wrong. It's a close call. But they stole that. They stole that from the Lynx fans, potentially, title. They stole a lot of the Liberty players' fun. And I just really hope, that one, this wasn't rigged, because that just makes it. If this was just bias, that's, like you said, American life that we have unfortunately gotten used to. But if this is rigging, I really hope that's not it. And I hope they can look inward and improve the officiating, because as frustrating as the NBA officiating is for me at times, it's not like this. Not since the days of Stern and Donaghy, like you mentioned.
Yeah, I'm going to pop another blood vessel if we keep talking about the end of this game right now and dicing that up. I will say the final thoughts that I have on the Lynx, and this has been echoed out there. I've tweeted about this too, is that no matter what happens, no matter if it's rigged, foul, not foul, Liberty fault, not Liberty fault, whatever, it was such an awesome season for the league. So
yeah,
the type of basketball, I watched every single game. I watched every single minute of every game. I missed it. I went back and I rewatched it. The type of basketball they played was so reminiscent of that. It was like that Spurs team, was it the 2013 Spurs, right? Or whatever it was, where they got the revenge on the Heat, that beautiful basketball. They just share the ball. They play so unselfishly. They have such an unselfish superstar. They play great defense. And they did that all the way through, save, you know, overtime of game five, where they played great pretty much the entire game, the entire series, the entire season. And it was just so much fun to watch. And that's the encouraging thing about it, is that this is reputable. This wasn't one player that just had a nuclear season that went off averaging like 35, like Asia Wilson, like went off and she went wild this year and rightfully won MVP unanimous. But you saw how far that got her in the playoffs. And yeah, they were probably fatigued from 2 years of winning the championship. But what the Lynx did is that they don't have players that are about to age out, and they have a type of basketball they can continue to recreate moving forward. And so I'm just so proud of what they did. I'm proud of their coaching job. I'm proud of the front office or making the acquisitions that they did. They can probably only build on this. I know expansion's coming. There will be expansion draft, but the top seven-ish of the Lynx most likely will still be around. You know, we're not losing huge pieces most likely, and hopefully we'll add on that. If anything, allows us more roster spots to make the pickups that we need to. But yeah, so super proud of them. Shout out to the Lynx forever. I am wearing my Explorer jersey, Lynx jersey, for one more time right now to rep them. And, you know, just salute to our women heroes.
Absolutely. And my wife and I went to game four. It was a fantastic game. Like I said, one of the best playoff series I've ever seen. The crowd was just fantastic. As good of a, I would put it up there with the playoff crowds for the Wolves, really. Especially like the first round, say, or the Mavs game five, where they were done by the end of the first quarter. Like,
that was the only playoff game in Minnesota. That was the only Minnesota Timberwolves game I went to in Minnesota, was game five. So yeah. I got a poor taste.
Exactly. But the game four was awesome. It was unbelievable atmosphere at Target Center. And I just feel bad for all those fans that don't get to sit in a parade. But life goes on. The Lynx will hopefully come back like those Spurs that avenged their title the next year. And I think they have as good a chance to come back and to avenge it as any team does. So we're looking forward to that. But we will move on here to our Timberwolves season preview. Tomorrow night they play late Central Time. They're starting with 2 9 p.m. Central Time starts. So we'll just not get any sleep out here in Minnesota. But they start with the Lakers. They move out to your second team, Leo, in Sacramento, before coming home opening night against Toronto. So we'll start with some of the preseason action that happened from this previous week with Howl or Foul. So Leo, Howl or Foul on Julius Randle's debut against the Chicago Bulls?
It's a Howl for me. We've been waiting for Julius Randle for a while, and it feels like Timberwolves fans are getting a little anxious. Is he going to play? Is he even healthy? Is he even ready to play the start of the season? And so we got nervous having him on our team for maybe 2 weeks, not seeing him play. But it's been over 9 months, or about 9 months, actually, since he actually last played a basketball game. So to see him out there, I was a little nervous. If any of you have watched much of Julius Randle play basketball in your life, he is the type of put his head down, ram you in with his shoulder, muck it up in there. Those classic mud runs that Derek Williams is known for, except actually functional. Julius Randle is great at that. And to see him out there still doing that on his repaired shoulder, that was great to see. There was a couple times where poor little Coby White was out there trying to do everything he could to try and guard Julius Randle, grab and pull and do everything early, but it was no match. Julius Randle was just such a bully down there. And to watch him do that, I was like, yo, I could get used to seeing this. And again, it's preseason. It was just the Bulls. I get it. But it was great to see him out there. He had 5 assists, I believe it was, in just 26 minutes of play. And you extrapolate that into 30 plus minutes of game time. Julius Randle is averaging over, say, like 6 or 7 assists a game. I think that's a lot higher than any of us would have expected him to produce out there. And so that game, the Wolves did play probably closest to their main rotation minutes. We'll get to the rest of the teams later. But seeing him play 26 minutes out there, look plenty healthy, get to the free throw line, some bully ball, I love to see it. So howl for me.
Yeah, I agree. Howl for me. My main thing was just to have him go out there and look healthy. There was kind of, when the trade was made, like some, is he going to be ready for the regular season? And I remember Finch saying down in Iowa a couple of weeks ago that there was like no doubt that he'd be ready and he was going to play in the preseason, which he obviously did. It was good to see him just, like you said, out there being a bully ball, doing what he does best. And kind of what I was thinking watching him play was, I'm starting to think that Julius Randle might be a better roster fit one for one than Karl Anthony Towns for this specific roster. Obviously, in a vacuum, Cat is a better player than Randle, and I would probably go as far to say as a much better player than Randle. But I just think some of the things that Cat did, the stray voltage, the kind of awkward drives, were holding the team back just a little bit, and a little bit kind of the Wolves reticent to kind of play Cat in the corner a little bit, and I think. Along with Randle's playmaking, I think will be huge. Where Cat was obviously a good playmaker, but would have the throws into the third row a couple times, and I think the bully ball aspect and kind of the more contained drives. That's what we saw a little bit against Chicago, where there's going to be similar plays where Anthony Edwards has kind of used his gravity to get the defense going to him, and there's going to be ball swings where Randle's going to be attacking a defense that is rotating out to him, where he can either shoot a three if it's open or pump fake and drive and get into a rotating defense, where a lot of times in that spot, Carl would do that, would get into the lane and there'd be someone rotating over for a charge or what have you. And I just think that while we don't need to relitigate the trade, but while the team ceiling was higher with Cat, I think just from a night in, night out fit, Randle actually might be better. And what you do lose, obviously, is shooting. But as we talked about, Dante from just like volume shooting should be able to replace that.
Yeah, I would have liked to see a little bit more defense out of Julius Randle out there. But again, the most important thing was health. You know, could he move around out there? Could he get out of the game without tweaking something? And so, again, to be honest, yeah, we didn't see a whole lot of defense out there from really anyone. All the Wolves from the starting players, but it still was, yeah. It's not like Cat was he had a great defensive playoff series, but yeah, it's not like he was a defensive stopper in his own right. So I do agree with you. The control drives, I'm glad you mentioned that, was Cat is, I mentioned this in one of our previous pods too, is that Cat can make good passes, but that risk reward is so much higher with them, while Julius Randle is making those solid decisions. And as you mentioned too, when Cat's driving, he gets a little out of control, he gets a little tunnel vision, while Julius Randle, he may not play the fastest, but he makes deliberate moves with intention, and he wasn't one of the top players offensive fouls given to that penalized for last year, right? So again, I do think that will make a huge difference in valuing the ball, spraying the ball out. He shot 0 3-point attempts, which is lower than probably what we'll see in the regular season, but who needs 3-point attempts when Anthony Edwards firing up 16 a game?
Right, exactly. And last year, Randle took a similar amount of attempts from three than Towns, obviously at a lower make percentage. But a lot of times it's just getting up the shots as much as it is making them. So I think what we saw from Randle was a good preseason debut. And we'll see on Tuesday night what the regular season version looks like. But on a topic two, Rob Dillingham stock in the preseason. Howl or foul? Personally, I'm going to go howl, but only in a long-term sense. I think we, as far as like the 8th overall pick in a weak draft goes, I think I saw a good amount of potential there, whether it's playmaking, shot making, all that sort of stuff that I think the Wolves were looking for. But ultimately, I've especially now that they've added another rotation player in the Cat trade in DiVincenzo, which it sounds like Dante's going to be playing a lot of backup point guard minutes behind Mike. I don't think Dillingham's going to play a lot when the roster is healthy. How about you, Leo?
I can agree with you that it's a how we're talking long term. You know, kid's only 19 years old still. He is showing plenty of promise out there in those little spurts. So, but I'm going to have to go foul for this one in terms of his stock. His stock is a little bit down on me. We went into the season thinking that he was going to be Mike Conley's primary backup. He was probably going to play heavy minutes. Tim Conley singing his praises, like, no, we're going to throw him in the fire. He's going to get in there. But who knows if what they saw out of him in the summer league or in practice or, you know, whatever in the gym, that might have been a catalyst for them saying, hey, if the Knicks are going to part with Dante DiVincenzo, then I think we need to make a change for that. And I'm not saying Rob Dillingham's the reason they traded Cat, but I find it hard to believe Tim Connelly didn't incorporate that into his calculus, that he was getting, as you mentioned, another potential playmaker, another rotation player out of that trade, and potentially taking the ball out of Rob Dillingham's. His development minutes taking that off, clicking it down just a little bit. And that Denver game, well, first of all, in the Chicago game, he hardly played. I think he played about 6 minutes or so. 0 for 3, 4 assists, 1 turnover. Really hard to really gain anything from that. But the Denver game, the final preseason game, he played a lot more. He played 26 minutes. Now, that would have been a higher had he not drawn foul, had he not been fouling players at such an astronomical rate. It looked like Jaden McDaniels out there just slapping away, committing a bunch of dumb fouls. And with him, it's not a lack of trying, but it's a lack of technique. It's a lack of reps for him out there. For his size, for as small as he is, and the fact that he already isn't innately a great defender, you saw him just getting pushed around. They were hunting him. Denver was hunting them. And Denver, yes, sure, they were playing for the majority of about 2.5 quarters and their starters. And so Rob Dillingham was playing against, you know, championship contending level talent. But he just couldn't control anything. He would give up early. He was Finch criticized him as well too, that he just didn't do his work early enough as well too. And so he racked up 5 fouls, played 26 minutes. And when his shot wasn't falling, he got some buckets going late. He had some cool drives that made the rounds on social media. He had a great hezzy that sent the defender flying by. Hit a couple jumpers here and there, but you really got to see that. I call it the Jamal Crawfordness of his game come out when his shot's not falling. And Jamal Crawford in his own right, I mean, that would not be a terrible outcome for the 8th pick of, as you mentioned, in a not great draft. So I'm not hating on that, but just if he's not contributing offensively, then what is he really doing out there? And so that's my worry with him. And there's plenty of time. I'm not writing him off, but just right now, I agree with you. He's not going to see a lot of minutes this year. He might be getting a little bit more Iowa Wolves treatment down there. And to be honest, that might be good for him. He might need that. We've seen plenty of, you know, there's Naz Reid, Josh Minot, players that played, you know, played in Iowa for the majority of their first two seasons. And then they really broke out later on. And so who's to say that Rob Dillingham can't be the next great Iowa Wolf to come out and have a solid career?
Yeah, exactly. I think you talked about the minutes and he played against Chicago. I think that's the biggest indication that he's not going to be playing many minutes in the regular season, at least to start out, because the reason why he didn't play many minutes in Chicago wasn't a basketball reason, is because of the aforementioned Lynx game 4, the Wolves had a preseason back-to-back. And so what they did was in Chicago, they played all their regular starting rotation players. And then because they didn't want to play them in a preseason back-to-back, all the regular rotation players sat against Denver. So they didn't want to put too... They wanted to play Rob a lot in that Denver game, or maybe they had to play Rob a lot in that Denver game. So the day before, they limited his minutes. So I just think that shows you what, at least to start out, they're not going to be playing Rob very much. Ultimately, the defense, how far that goes will be a big factor in his productivity as a NBA player. It's hard for 19-year-old guards are bad on defense just in general. So when you're also a small guard, I don't think there's going to be much of a role, at least to start out, for Dillingham. And I don't think that's like a big knock on him either. I think that's okay. And I think it just shows another aspect of the Cat trade, getting Dante in here to kind of take over those minutes is good.
Yeah. When it's all said and done, Rob Dillingham kind of showed us, for the most part, who we thought he was going to be coming into the draft. He's going to offer little to nothing on defense. We saw some of the explosive offense come out in the first preseason game against the Lakers. You saw some of that great playmaking potential that did come out in a number of those games as well, too. And just look at individually skill-wise, he was able to get advantage in a lot of one-on-one situations. He maybe fell in love a little bit with too much with getting those one-on-one situations where he's like, all right, I know I could blow by this guy. Let me just back it out and pound the ball a couple times and a little through the legs, around it, and then dribble pass. And he had that great speedy burst, something that we didn't see as much in the preseason. Perhaps he had that ankle injury, whatever the case is. Great handle, but he does pick up that ball way too much in the paint, and he jumps without really making a decision on what he was going to do, just kind of predetermined, just jumps, like, I'll figure it out in the air. And so those are things that will mature over the years, and he'll be able to, you know, curb that into more winning style of basketball and, you know, get rid of those bad habits. But I think it was most indicative by Coach Chris Finch when he said, I think it was after the last preseason game, where he said that Rob Dillingham's taking a hard road right now, and that his preseason has been summed up as mixed. And so Finch is not one to beat around the bush. He's going to call it like it is. And that doesn't sound like someone that he's going to be relying on to play many more than garbage time minutes at most right now. So, you know, again, not out on him, but right now stock's a little bit down compared to perhaps what some of us thought he would be playing heading into the season.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, let's move on to kind of the meat of our preseason projections here, our season preview. Topic 3 here, howl or foul. The Wolves Vegas over under is 52.5. And I will say here, I don't bet on sports. I'm not even allowed to do it in Minnesota, but I like using the Vegas lines as kind of a consensus number to see where people are generally think. Obviously, it's not a perfect number, but it's a good barometer for most stats. So their over under is 52.5 wins on the season. So Leo, howl or foul, the Wolves winning 53 or more games this season.
This is a quiet little howl for me on this one. I predicted on Candace Hoopis in our Candace Pulse's prediction edition, I predicted that they would go 53-29 as her record. So they hit right above that Vegas line. But I will say I'm going to go officially on the record and say they're going to hit the under on that. So on Candace Hoopis, every year we've done this for 9 years in a row. We do our staff writers predictions for the seasons. Are they going to hit the over or the under on the Vegas mark? And for the last 4 years, I've been wrong. I've called it when I said over, they hit the under. I said the under, they hit the over. And so for Minnesota fans out there, I'm going to do what I need to do and say that they're going to hit the under this year. And they're just going to barely miss and reverse jinx them. So I'm going to say under. That's my call. What about you?
So yeah, if you are looking for betting advice, I guess the advice is just fade Leo. That's what we're looking for.
You're welcome.
Would you say I'm sure you still have them at like 49-52 wins, that general area.
Yeah, I would say that. I would say they're going to be right at that 50 mark, right around 50.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just kind of thinking that'll get you out of the play-in tournament, which is the biggest thing. Get it. I mean, you'd like to be top 4, top 6. I think that number would probably get that done. I'm going to go how. The main reason I think they will win 53 or more games, the main reason is that they just have so much depth on this team. We just talked about Dillingham. While he's obviously a flawed player, as like your 13th man, one of the last guys kind of on the roster that could get playing time, that he's way better than most players there, because he's going to play. Neither of us believe that he's just completely out of the rotation. Mike is going to miss games. There's going to be times where they need Rob Dillingham, and he's going to score. And the name of the game is a score. So he's going to provide value where other teams, if they're reaching down to the 11th, 12th player on the roster, isn't going to find value. And to me, the biggest thing that swings your wins in the regular season are depth, where obviously you don't want someone to get hurt, but like I look at the Denver roster and like if Jokic misses a week, they're going to like go 0-3 in that week. And again, you don't want that to happen. And specifically Jokic plays a style where he doesn't get hurt for more than a game at a time. But there's a lot of teams that I just look at. Phoenix, if they're missing one of their big three guys, where are they going to get scoring from? If you're looking at OKC is a bad example, they have plenty of depth. But if you look at maybe Memphis, we saw a season, obviously, if any team misses as many players as Memphis last year, you're just going to be screwed. But I just think that depth, they have 7 quality guys that would start on a playoff roster just fine. Their normal starting 5, Dante and Nasri. They have Nikhil. They have Joe Ingles as a playoff vet. They have Luka, who we'll talk about later. I just think that that depth is going to provide so much value. And on nights where you don't have everyone available, you're still going to be able to win games against good or bad teams just with that depth alone.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned Denver earlier. Their depth, if, you know, say Jokic goes out, what does that do for them? I mean, I don't know, Ryan. They just signed Aaron Gordon to a 3-year, $133 million contract. I mean, that's a $44 million player you're talking about there in Aaron Gordon.
Did that happen today? I missed that.
That happened just earlier. Yeah, this evening. Right. So, yeah, Denver's, they're burning their money. And so, no, I do agree with you. I think my reason for them hitting closer to 50 wins this season for the Wolves is less to do with how good they're going to be, but the amount of balance that we're going to see in the West, the amount of parity we're going to see in the West, is that a lot of people think, oh, well, everyone's so hard. Yeah, well, when everyone's so hard, there's going to be less wins, easy wins that they're going to pick up. And so I think everyone will be sitting right there at that, you know, at worst, low 40s, high 40s, but most of them will be in the 50s to maybe 55 win range. And so when they're all sitting there, you can be perhaps maybe a low 50 win team, maybe a 50, 51 win team, and still maybe win a tiebreaker and be able to score yourself into a third, fourth, maybe a third seed. So who knows? Who knows what happens with that? But yeah, I think that's a great line by Vegas right there. I think 53 is 52 and a half is pretty set, pretty sweet to yeah. take.
I agree that the West is better this year. Although I will say that I feel like we say that every year, and then one or two teams drop off for whatever reason, and we're looking at a similar conference from the year before. But ultimately, there are a couple teams that are like significantly better. I think Phoenix, from a regular season standpoint, will be significantly better. Memphis, obviously, they won 27 games. They're gonna win 20 more than that, probably. For every team that like kind of moves up, there'll be teams that move down. Can Dallas win 50 games again next year? I don't know. So, but I agree with you that there's a chance that the Wolves get better, they play better, and instead of winning 56, they win 52, and they hit that under. And still, we look at them as a finals contender going into the playoffs.
You sure you don't want to change last minute? 82-0, first time NBA history, maybe?
Nope. I will stick with my slight over as my prediction.
Shout out to Allen.
Yep. But another over-under we got here, Ants over-under, 27 or more points per game. Howl or foul on him going over on that scoring mark this year?
For 27, You know, I would say with 27 points per game, I really feel like that's a high mark for Ant, and so I'm going to have to go with foul on this. I don't think 27 is... It's not unrealistic. He certainly can do it. We've seen him without Karl-Anthony Towns there. Of course, there's more opportunity for him. But again, Julius Randle isn't just a defensive specialist. He's going to soak up some minutes as well, too. I think the Wolves will probably play a little bit more well-rounded style of basketball. And I think Ant's assists will go up. So I'm not sure what the assist line is at. I would probably take the over on that. 27 points, again, I think that's doable. But I would probably say that it's maybe a little too high for him. I think he's learned the importance of having to keep himself fresh for the playoffs. And so I don't think he's going to go as nuclear as he did, kind of proving himself like, all right, I'm really trying to make a stamp this year, where I think he's going to focus more. How do I make my team better? And so for me, I'm going to go foul. I think he's going to be just under 27. He'll have a couple explosions here or there. That's Anthony Edwards. He's going to hit 50. He might even have a 60-point game this year, but I think overall he will cool it off a little bit, and he just won't be scoring the ball as much as he usually does. He's trying to grow that other part of his game. What about you?
Personally, I'm going to go Howl and say that he goes over that 27 number, just kind of looking at his year-over-year scoring. I do think he'll go slightly over, kind of be in that somewhere between 27, 28, kind of 27 and a half points per game, just because I think he'll just have a larger offensive load, scoring load, without Karl-Anthony Towns in the rotation. I just think he's going to score a lot for this team. Moving on to our final Howl or foul. Wolves, will they go 3-0 this week? Like I said, they play in Los Angeles against the Lakers, at Sacramento, and at home against the Toronto Raptors. What do you think, Leo? Howl or foul on 3-0 to start the year?
Oh, baby. I will say, for those of you who do not know me, hating on the Lakers is as big of a part of my identity as it is rooting for the Timberwolves. And so for them to open against the Lakers, I looked at tickets to get in the door at crypto.com. I can't call that. To get in the door at Staples Center, okay, is about $300 for nosebleeds. Have you ever been in the nosebleeds in a huge arena like that? Staples probably a little bit bigger than the Target Center. I'd say you are not going to be seeing much just to get in the door for everyone going there to want to see Bronny suit up in garbage time when the Lakers are down 25 points in the third quarter. Like, sure, go ahead. Enjoy watching Bronny out there for a little bit, right? So I think for me, it's a howl because I do think that they're going to smack the Lakers on opening night. I think the Timberwolves have been rearing to get back on the court after falling short in the Western Conference Finals. I think Julius Randle has been itching to play minutes, and he might not get his full, you know, 30 mid to high 30 minute mark that he might be playing. He might be eased in, but I think the Wolves, I saw how the Lakers looked out there. I watched the Lakers more, not just in the lone game that the Timberwolves smacked them in the first game, but I watched the Lakers second, third stringers lose by, what was it, almost 60 points in their final preseason game. The Lakers are not inspiring anyone. So again, that's more of an indictment on the Lakers. And, you know, they're a big market. And again, for as much as I was just complaining about the big market getting big market privilege, as we saw last year, big market means bigger shoes. LeBron James stepping on that line last year, infamously on his birthday. So again, I'm not really worried about the rest of the Lakers. I will say against Sacramento, I will be attending that game. I'll be flying up. Be checking out my friends and family up there, so I'm super excited for that. But Wolves fans will be happy to know I am, I think, about 70% win rate at going to Kings Timberwolves game. So don't worry, guys, I got y'all. Kings, they don't stand a chance. Remember, Anthony Edwards loves playing in Sacramento. He says that's his favorite gym to play in. So again, expecting a big night for him. And Toronto Raptors, I mean, come on, that's an easy clap. I know last year that was a disappointing opener. We lost to them and blah 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 blah. I think the days of us losing to these perennial losers is over. Like, yes, we lost against the Hornets last year. We lost against the Spurs once last year. Yeah, whatever. But for the most part, we dominated those tanking teams. And so again, I expect the Raptors to also just get smacked by us. So 3-0, I'm going Hal. What about you?
I'm going to go foul. Just kind of like law of averages a little bit. I think it'll take them a little bit to get acclimated. And while I think, like, if you ask me each individual game, will they win? I'd probably say yes. Just like, if I give them a 66% chance to win each game, that's going to end up at 2-1. So I think they'll drop one of these games, and I'm sure Wolves fans will overreact and project all sorts of crazy things based on one early season loss.
Which game? Call it. Call your shot. Which game is it?
Probably Sac. I don't know. Hopefully for your sake, not. Maybe the home opener. I don't know. Or the the season opener against the Lakers, like you said.
Not taking the Raptors this year?
No, I hope not. That'll be my first game of the year, so we're hoping for a dub there.
You're right.
Yeah, but next topic, Apex Alpha. We share who was our leader of the pack this week. My Apex Alpha is Luka Garza, who in that Nuggets preseason game outscored Nikola Jokic by 25 points. Obviously, Jokic had a lot less to play for than Luka in a preseason game, but just kind of made me think, I think Luka is going to play a lot more than, like, the general person thinks. I think he's going to play solid rotation minutes anytime one of Naz Reid, Rudy Gobert, or Julius Randle is not playing in the game. And I think that's fine. He's gone from just, like, we talked about Dillingham, that level of defender, to just kind of like regular below average defender. And I kind of just think the scoring is real from him. Obviously, there's going to be bad matchups if he plays against the Heat, say. Like, Adebayo is going to cause him issues. Wembanyama is not a great matchup for him. But I think that spotted against matchups that work well for him, he's going to play well and he's going to be able to score.
Yeah, my notes on Luka Garza, and I think anytime we bring up Luka Garza, like, that's great. We love talking about Luka Garza. Now, my notes for him, I remember in that Denver game, the one you're talking about, if he's outscoring Nikola Jokic by 25 points a game, that means he's averaging about 40-some points a game. And so I'd say that's the Apex Alpha that was for me too. Now, I mean, there's no question that Luka Garza could offer something like, talking in theory here, like a cat light on offense. He can shoot the ball, the paint. He can kind of do some of those things. And so I do think that there's a role for him on defense. As I was really, really trying to focus on his defense, and no one's stopping Jokic one-on-one for the most part, unless your name's Naz Reid, or sorry, unless your name's Carl Anthony Towns. No, is that Luka Garza's defensive issues isn't so much about his foot speed. He's worked on that. He's gotten faster. It's just some of his defensive decision-making, that he does jump a little too fast. He is kind of rotating, maybe perhaps not all the way to where he needs to go. He's making the wrong reads sometimes. And so that'll come with reps. And yeah, absolutely. I agree that he had a great showing in the preseason. He did nothing but help his stock. And so I would love to see him playing a couple more meaningful minutes regularly throughout the preseason, or sorry, throughout the regular season. So for me, Ryan, my Apex Alpha is Jalen Clark. Jalen Clark, yeah. The new number 22 now. Mm-hmm. We've talked about this in a couple episodes in a row now where minutes are going to be hard to come by. So this doesn't mean that I think Jalen Clark suddenly is going to be our eighth or ninth or maybe even 10th man off the bench right now. But he's next in the Corey Brewer, Josh Okogie, Jarrett Culver lineage of being just a jump shot away. That's all he's got to do is just have a decent jump shot that we can rely on, because his defense continues to blow me away. I'm telling you, in 21 minutes against Denver, in the notes that I took throughout that game, he made 13 defensive plays. I'm like, yo, I got to write that down. Like, he had some just mind-blowing defensive effort plays that, and motor and skill plays and reads that was just, you know, like, that's an NBA player right there. And so there was the way that I think of him now that after I had time to digest and kind of dissect the film on watching him play, is that he plays with the physical intensity of a Josh Okogie, but he hunts blind spots like a Ricky Rubio, like a Jose Alvarado, where he's just hiding behind players. He's constantly seeing, as soon as a player turns his head away from him, he's constantly lurking. It's gotten him into trouble a couple of times, but his effort and his speed is that he's not just a one play type of player. He will go for that steal. He'll front his guy. He'll deny the ball. He'll hunt for that steal, whether it's, you know, in a lane that they're not looking, coming up from behind. And once, if he doesn't get it, then he hightails it right back on to make that rotation that he needs to be at. So I love watching play. It was hard to take my eyes off of him in there. So again, if he really gets that jump shot down, I think for sure that's going to be a player. So I'm really excited to watch. I've always watched the Iowa Wolves a good amount throughout the regular season. And so I'm excited to watch him and play next to Rob Dillingham out there, watch him kind of grow. I'm not that excited about seeing Jesse Edwards play for the Iowa Wolves, but you know, he's going to be out there. But Jalen Clark, that man, Jalen Clark and Josh Minot are the remains of Ricky Rubio's second part tenure in the Minnesota Timberwolves uniform. When he was traded away for Taurean Prince, we got some seconds that turned into Josh Minot, that turned into Jalen Clark. And so again, he is part of that. And so again, I just love seeing him play out there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just glad that he gets to play at all right now, because last year he was still recovering from that Achilles. So it's good to see him get minutes. I'm glad that he gets to show the defensive prowess. And like you said, we just need to kind of rein in that jump shot, some of that offensive decision-making. Hopefully he'll get to do that in Iowa. And another, as we've talked about, Josh Minot probably being in the rotation to some extent this year, maybe Clark can be that in a year or two.
Yeah, I'm excited. I do love those developmental guys this year. I think every year it's easy to fall in love with that. Like, oh, Marcus George's Hunt is going to be a great player one day, or, you know, insert whatever G League player, you know, you're going back to your Malcolm Lees or, you know, whoever, Ashton Hagens, that's going to be a great player one day. But, you know, this is a time, right? This is a time to be high on some of these guys. So I'm pumped.
Yeah, my kind of stance on that is I'm kind of a downer on some of that. And the Wolves being so good last year and really kind of a playoff team the past 3 years, is I'm kind of excited not to worry about those players, where I get to just focus on the regular season and not be, my season's over. What is Mitch Creek doing? What is, like you said, Marcus Sturgis?
Leandro Balmaro. Come on. Yes,
all those sorts of guys. No shade to them, but winning basketball is certainly what our focus will be heading into the regular season. Next topic here, prey of the week. Who did the Wolves make their prey this week? I'm going to say not this week, but I'm going to say the Wolves are going to make the Western Conference their prey this year.
Hey.
Every single team. I came across this kind of over under what seed. We talked about their wins, over under what seed they're going to be, and they kind of had the number at over under 3.5. So if they are top 3 seed like they were last year, that'd be over, and under would be a 4 seed or lower. Personally, I would, that the over number, unless it was loaded with a big vig, I think the over number there is kind of what I'd be looking at. I just think from a regular season standpoint, Oklahoma City is the only team that, like, I would be like, I'm already like, yeah, I don't know if they can catch, although Hartenstein's hurt now, so maybe that changes that. But I think that they're going to be a top three seed in the Western Conference. What do you think about that?
I think absolutely. As I mentioned earlier, that although I'm projecting them to be under that 53 win mark, I still think it's very possible for them to be above the three seed at most, because again, that parity of other teams defeating each other, I think that's absolutely a realistic scenario. And I agree with you. There's not that many teams I look at. It's like, yo, I'm scared of them. I mean, even the Pelicans last year, who were so scary, even the Phoenix Suns last year, who were so scary. We saw what the Wolves could do and what Finch could do from his cast and the second row to be able to get his team together to beat those teams in playoffs. So I have full trust in them. Again, we're talking about postseason, but in the regular season, I still do think that there's still a lot of room to improve. And there's been a couple murmurs about that coach Finch has been itching for a team like this for some time, a team that could play a little bit faster, a team that could take a little bit more three-pointers. And so I do think he's really going to start working his magic. He was at one point known as to be an offensive genius, and that's where the Wolves struggled last year. I think last year was obviously an opportunity for them to win a championship, but they really laid that important foundation of defense and really put that into the players' DNA so that now they can really do what Finch is so great at, which is coaching up an offense. So I'm excited for that.
Yeah. This year, for me, they really got to get up to a top 10 offense because their defense is going to be top 10. And that's really the number of teams that have finished outside the top 10 in either offense or defense and won a title. Those are outlier teams. Generally, almost all of them, you got to be top 10 in both. And maybe the Wolves defense slips to like 5. That wouldn't be crazy. But if they can get that offense to top 10 levels, and they have the talent, they had it the past couple of years to be at that level. Like you said, I wouldn't say Finch is not close to a hot seat, but to me, with the offense, it's kind of a make or break season with the Rudy Gobert version of the team. Like, if we can't get this to top of the double, do we think about the future of the team with Gobert? And is it possible to have a top 10 offense with this version of the team? So that's kind of just the offense. The defense is going to be there, but is the offense going to be able to get up to that championship level?
Yeah, imagine a team in the future that we're kind of going on a tangent here, but a team in the future where it's Anthony Edwards, Jaden McDaniels, Julius Randle, and Naz Reid running around out there. That's not going to be a slow team, right? In terms of the speed and pace that they can play with, the offense that they're playing out there. So again, that's a little bit further down the line. So, three and a half.
That group is going to play a lot of minutes this year. They're going to, Rudy's going to sit 16 minutes a game or whatever.
That's what I'm saying.
That group is going to play a lot of minutes together. And I think when Rudy's on the floor, they'll probably slow stuff down a little bit. But when Rudy's off, they should just run.
Yeah, I agree. Well, speaking of running, my prey of the week is a man that probably should have run. I'm going with Vlatko Kanchar, I think is how you pronounce his name. Slovenian player. He sat out all last season with a torn ACL that he suffered overseas. I do think that Vlatko, he's a solid NBA player, but there was one play where TJ Shannon just grabbed the ball. It was off a pass in transition. He grabbed the ball at the three-point line, kind of pumped, and then he ripped through and just attacked the closeout. He went right up, and he smashed a one-handed dunk on Kanchar that just obliterated him. And I feel bad for him because he battled back, he was rehabbing to come back from a torn ACL, just come back to get smacked on by TJ. So that's my prayer of the week. Again, dunking on the Nuggets, maybe that's a foreshadow of what's to come in the season, of what the Nuggets are going to have to deal with. They don't necessarily have, they have Aaron Gordon on a fresh 40-some million dollar a year contract, but they don't have that much talent out there when you look at what they're having. You have your Vlatko Kanchar is playing minutes. You have your Julian Strothers, who had the best game of his life in the last preseason game against the Wolves. You have Christian Brown, who's still afraid to shoot jumpers. You have Michael Porter Jr., who, if you believe in him, Godspeed. But, I like the Wolves' chances. So, Vlatko, I'm sorry you're the prey of the week.
Yeah, it makes me think, what is Shannon's role when the season starts? Because to me, he looks more NBA-ready than Dillingham. Well, obviously, the ceiling isn't there necessarily for Shannon. I think there's a chance that the first game Mike Conley miss a back-to-back or whatever, that Shannon might be the first nod to get into the rotation and play some guard minutes there. He's certainly shown the physical traits, like you said, with the dunk to get in there. So I think Shannon might be the first person that joins the rotation that isn't in it from the first game.
Yeah, he plays with the defensive intensity innately out there, and that's what Finch loves. You have to play defense to be out there, and that's why I agree with you, is that Rob Dillingham might not get minutes because he's not going to be able to play defense yet. TJ is ready to play defense, and so he will probably get a shot at some point if, you know, God forbid there are some injuries. You know, Josh Minot has rightfully earned a spot in the rotation, but TJ Shannon probably is waiting in the wings, not that far off. And so I wouldn't be surprised if TJ is a guy that spends some time in Iowa, but quickly proves that he's too good to be playing in Iowa in the G League, and that he's spending more time on the bench getting ready for his opportunity to play with a big squad.
Right. And I always kind of think with a lot of these guys where Iowa time would be good for them. Ultimately, most of them that are on full-time contracts end up staying up with the Wolves. And even a lot of the two-way guys, like Luca last year was seemingly, or 2 years ago, was on the roster, seemingly like they're running out of two-way games for him. I think that a lot of these main contract guys will stay with the team. They'll get plenty of run on practice, and that might be as good as work as you'd get in Iowa. But I'm very interested to see kind of how the rotation works out, because there's just so many guys, Minot and Ingles, that are, I don't know if they're fringe or what their roles will be. So I'm interested to get into actual games and kind of leave the preseason behind us, because it's always a crapshoot, like what to take away from the preseason and what to just write off as nothing.
Yeah, I got to say, I mean, putting preseason behind us, the last couple things I just wanted to quick shout outs I want to give out. Mm-hmm. One is to Leonard Miller. Still a bit of a mystery box out there, but in that last game against Denver, you saw that surprising type of play that he has at both ends of the court for both good and bad reasons. He had a great help side block on Jokic, and then he immediately gives up a strong side corner three. He seemingly has all the tools on offense. He hits a Ginobili-like step back three, and then coast-to-coast and one layup right after with control and physicality. And the next play, he's running around. He doesn't know who to box out. He doesn't know where to guard. He doesn't know where to rotate. So shout out him. I also got a shout out to my man as well, Josh Minot. Again, we've praised him all year against the Bulls where he played, which was super exciting to see that he was one of the three players off the bench that played 20 plus minutes. He went 7 of 10. He hit three threes, including one buzzer beating step back three that I was, if that's what Josh Minot's doing, he might be playing starter minutes soon. And so again, Josh Minot, big shout out to him as well too. And then lastly, what I want to say as well too is a quick little mini shout out to Dacian Nix. There are times when he's out there. Dacian Nix has seemingly been the NBA now for about, I want to say his 15th year in the NBA probably. No, but for real, he's been on the NBA a little bit longer than I thought, and he looked like the part out there. There were times he was actually a consistent, steady hand. He looked almost more ready to play as a point guard too than Rob Dillingham or even Nikhil out there sometimes. And he had a great lob breakup on Russ. He could get up there. He has great chemistry with Luka, a couple gorgeous passes. Defensively, has a lot of work to do as well too. He's not quite as low as a Rob Dillingham level, but he's not quite ready to play, I think, regular starter level minutes. But again, we'll be seeing a lot of him in the G League as well too.
Yeah, those are all the guys that I'm interested in their roles to see. So we'll see. I expect Minot to play, but we'll see what the rest holds. Certainly not to downplay his on-court ability, but Dacian Nix leading the hype squad on the bench.
Yes, sir.
It's always fun. All these guys, the G League season hasn't started yet, so everyone's going to be there. So that'll be fun.
Ryan, I got a bone to pick about that though. You talk about Dacian Nix on the bench and his little pointing celebration. Why has it not picked up more steam that they call him the point god? The legit, if you can't see this right now, but I'm pointing to the camera because that is Dacian Nix. He's the point god, and I'm a little sad that hasn't stuck with them, but anyways, I had to get that off my chest.
Yeah, I mean, go file a petition with Basketball Reference to get it on his nickname list, and we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, I've tried, believe it or not, but it hasn't worked. It hasn't gone through.
Yeah, that's too bad. Well, we'll move on to our final segment here as we wrap up every pod with our own two words. Leo, your two words.
My two words are Time's Arrow. One of my favorite TV shows, adult cartoon show, BoJack Horseman. There's an episode where the character says, "Time's arrow neither stands still nor reverses. It merely marches forward. And though the Lynx loss is still heavy on my heart and they'll still be back and, you know, all the controversy, we got to move forward. The Wolves are a really, really welcome distraction that we have coming up. We've been really blessed this offseason, Ryan. We've been blessed with the fact that the Wolves played late into May, and then that led right into the Lynx. The Lynx already started their season, and that bled right into Summer League starting. Right after Summer League was over, that went right into the Olympics. Right after Olympics was over, we came back. We had Lynx that lengthy playoff push run that should have culminated in a championship that also coincided with the Wolves preseason. So we really have had Minnesota basketball nonstop all summer. And so, you know, Time's Arrow, right? It continues to march forward, and we'll see. I mean, just like that, we're back in the season. So time zero, those are my two words. What about you, Ryan?
Yeah, it's been a beautiful last 12-ish months of Minnesota basketball between the Lynx and Wolves. I don't think you could ask for much more. Obviously, we were asking one more travel call. Would have been nice. But yeah, it's been an incredible 12 months of just amazing basketball. The Lynx especially, just the ball movement. They're a crazy good team. If you watch basketball and you're not, if you can get over the whatever the women aspect of it all, which you should, it's just phenomenal basketball. The ball movement, everything is phenomenal, and it's too bad that it ended, but it was a fun season nonetheless. My two words, tree jerseys. This is something that's kind of intriguing me. I have no info other than what any of you could have on the internet, but they posted a social media clip of all the players reacting to their favorite jerseys, and pretty much all of them picked out the black classic tree jerseys. And then they also posted that the famous photo back in the day with Randy Moss and KG that is being recreated with Justin Jefferson and Anthony Edwards. There's a leaked photo from that a few weeks ago, a month ago, that Justin Jefferson is wearing the same black tree jersey. And I'm just wondering if they are thinking about adding that jersey to the rotation. Again, I have no info. It's just pure speculation, because where we stand, the jersey selection for this year is pretty rough. We have the, as we call it, the sailor jerseys, the classic home and away white and blue ones. They have the grayish blackish ones with the neon green accent. And then they have the same kind of similar, the iced out lake jerseys from last year. That the color scheme is kind of flipped, that those are not officially yet have been leaked. And I just wonder if that's the rotation, that's pretty rough, because every single person wants some version of the throwbacks, whether it's the trees or the 90s jerseys that they wore last year. I'm just wondering if they're going to add that to rotation, but at the very least, we're going to see Justin Jefferson rocking that black tree jersey.
What if they bring back what I call them inappropriately, the penis green tree jerseys. I'm talking Mike Miller, Randy Ford, Brian Cardinal, the one with the little green trees. They have little green triangle on their pants, the really ugly ones. What if that's what they end up? No, I'm just kidding. They're not going to go with that. But absolutely, yeah, the tree jerseys, like my bank account will not be happy, but I will be happy if they release the black tree jerseys. I might have to buy five different players in the black tree jerseys right now. Just going on DHgate and finding some legal place to recreate them, because those are so beautiful. Imagine Anthony Edwards, Edwards number 5, black tree jersey playing on Christmas. Like that will be, like, I can't even imagine how exciting that's going to be. So I am pumped for that. Again, I think educated guess. Why would they ask all their players who their favorite jersey is, or which is their favorite jersey? And they all, I think everyone said almost the same way. I think one person went with the classic throwback Wolves one, but the 90s one, but everyone else went with the tree jersey. Like, why would they do that? And then I think they posted a video, the official Timberwolves posted a video of Justin Jefferson playing basketball, retweeted Justin Jefferson playing basketball, pick up basketball with people and say, oh, you know, I think eyes emoji tomorrow, which means that they're going to drop that photo shoot that they did. And again, as you mentioned, that leak of that photo of him wearing that black tree jersey, I don't think that was supposed to get out, because that was certainly a leaked photo. That was not like an intentional leak. Right. And so I'm really excited about how they're releasing the jerseys. Again, last year, I think by this point, we knew what all the jerseys were. They haven't even officially announced the ice jerseys yet. They just announced their hashtag, which we don't need to get into, the hashtag Minnesota nice or that's nice, whatever that is. But there's two jerseys that officially or unofficially potentially have not been released yet or announced. And so I'm curious to see. I mean, tomorrow's the season already. So are they going to announce it the day of a game? Are they going to announce it the day before a game? So yeah, it's quite interesting.
Yeah, I just really hope they add some jerseys, because the current rotation is not my favorite. And it just seems like every time they get this amazing jersey, whether it's any of the throwbacks or the Prince ones they had
the remix,
a couple years ago. Yeah. Right. I just hope that maybe it's just time for a full-on rebrand again. Maybe not full-on, but I would love if they, like, the jerseys there were last year were just beautiful, those 90s ones. It should just make that. I like that shade of blue better. The green is an accent. I would hope they'd go back to that, but I am not a marketing genius on that sort of stuff, so maybe they have better info on that than we do.
Yeah, I'm excited. Either way, I'm just excited for Timberwolves basketball to start tomorrow. By the time you're listening to us, it'll be tonight that you'll be hearing it or you'll be watching the game. So Wolves are ready to go. We're ready to go. We're excited to bring you the best coverage here at Two Words Wolves Pod.
Yeah, exactly. So we got three games this week at Lakers, at Kings, and then home Raptors. Leo will be a fan at that Kings game, and I'll be covering the home opener against Toronto this Saturday. We'll be back about a week from today to recap those games and look forward to some more basketball. We got a long way to go. Regular season ends in April, and hopefully they're playing on to through mid-June. That's the hope to get through the finals. So that's where we'll go from here. We're looking forward to the season. We're looking forward to bringing you guys the best content we can.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Make sure y'all drive safe.